Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, the 4th of May, 2012. Hope you're having a great day and looking forward to a special weekend. I know I am. A big shout out to my lovely wife and bride of 40 years, married on Cinco de Mayo, 1972, Ann Buckmaster. Congratulations. I am Bill Buckmaster. We thank you very much for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday at noon on The Voice, KVOI, AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and simulcasting on KAPR, AM 930 in Douglas. We'll stream the show live on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And we have three places where you can hear the program anytime: buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com. Today's Friday Focus interview is with Dr. Kate Kensky, who teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods at the Department of Communication at the University of Arizona. She's the co-author of The Obama Victory: How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Kensky, call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. And it seems each political cycle brings a growing hostility among the candidates. Certainly a discussion of political civility is needed now more than ever in light of the Tucson shootings of January 8, 2011. The Tucson-based National Institute for Civil Discourse, which was created shortly after the shootings, is funding four UA researchers working on two independent projects aimed at investigating civility in the public domain. Dr. Kate Kensky is one of the researchers. She joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. And joining me in studio to question Dr. Kensky, Mark Evans, the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, and Sarah Garrett Gasson is with us, editorial writer of the Arizona Daily Star. Dr. Kensky, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on 40 years.
Well, it is quite a milestone. Thank you very much, Kate. Let me ask you, where are you right now in your research project?
We have taken a while to code civility. It ends up being a much more difficult task than other types of coding. But we have completed coding to understand comments posted to the Arizona Daily Star. And we've done a little bit of analysis on those comments, on what types of incivility tend to arise most, as well as collecting information on different types of articles and people's reaction to those articles, because some types of topics provoke more ire than others.
Is it possible, Kate Kensky, to discuss politics and remain civil or polite in America?
Absolutely, and I think that there are different venues that we have to do that, particularly political debates, which are monitored in some ways. What makes it more difficult, however, is that we're increasingly seeing people turn to sources of information that merely confirm what they already believe, rather than going to other sources of information to get some kind of check on what they believe. And so people tend to get more intense about those beliefs they have. And so then when they are confronted with someone who disagrees with the way they see the world, they do one of two things. They get really angry, or they simply back away from talking about politics altogether.
Here is, speaking of the Arizona Daily Star, Sarah Garrett Gasson for Kate Kensky.
Yeah, I think my first reaction is, are there civil comments being made on the online comments? But I was actually wondering, this is something that I have wondered, if the anonymity, relatively speaking, of online comments, including on the Arizona Daily Star's comment section, if you have found, and maybe it's too early, any correlation between some newspapers, news organizations that require you to like sign up through Facebook or someplace where you're not just anonymous or known by a handle. What have you been finding in terms of the anonymity and the civility?
Unfortunately, we are tracking that. We have just completed the extent to which people reveal things like attaching their Facebook identifications to their Arizona Daily Star identities. My colleague, Steve Raines, who is one of the people on the project, Dr. Raines, one of his areas is anonymity, and he's concerned with exactly what you've described. When people are anonymous online, they assume less responsibility potentially for what they say. And so that is potentially a problem. Now, the Arizona Daily Star does ask people to give some information about themselves, although it would be possible, perhaps, for people to fake identities. And so that's definitely a concern. One of the things we have tracked in the comments, and again, we haven't had time yet to analyze it, but we have tracked the extent to which people reveal things about themselves, like, well, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican who is part of this organization or union. And we will be looking at the extent to which those kinds of factors influence whether or not people feel comfortable engaging in particularly flagrant forms of rhetoric.
Here now is Mark Evans. He is the administrator of the site TucsonCitizen.com. You're with Dr. Kate Kensky. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Kensky. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Hey, when the civility discussion erupted last year, I thought it seemed kind of silly. Because it was, one, it was based on a false premise that Jared Loughner was somehow motivated by the vitriol on talk radio when he wasn't. And two, because in a land of free speech, who's going to be the arbiter of what's civil? But it seems that Sheriff Dupnik did tap into this kind of wellspring of fatigue amongst the public with the name-calling and the negativity and the like. But I'm wondering in your research if you're finding any general consensus of where the line can be drawn in which this type of speech is clearly uncivil and this type of speech isn't but maybe approaches the line. And or is the line by its nature kind of a moving target depending on the individual biases of the people who are reading what may be or may not be civil speech?
That's an excellent question. And I should say at the outset, The Institute was created, you know, in the month after the shootings, and I think that when all was said and done and the dust had settled, people came to realize that incivility didn't cause the events, for sure. But nevertheless, I think that people were discontent enough with the way 2010 had been conducted that they were willing to use that is a launching point for trying to figure out how we can restructure how we have conversations in a way that, of course, is consistent with the First Amendment, which is a concern. When these grants were initially announced in July of last year, one of the things that that took my colleagues and I by surprise when we got this grant was the concerns that you're saying exactly. In fact, off of what I would consider a rather benign article that said these grants were released and this is what they're going to do, most of the concerns were really about, well, is this going to be used to police rhetoric in some way? And so what I would say is that my colleagues and I really did take these concerns into consideration. With our coding scheme in particular, we certainly don't want to do anything that would disrupt disagreement, because politics is supposed to be about disagreement, but simply look at different trends. And we've tried to create a coding scheme that would look at different types of language that in some ways may be considered a moving target. We've noticed, for example, that although we've focused on the Arizona Daily Star, there is an undergraduate who decided to take up our coding scheme and apply it to some newspapers in Boston and found that that the levels of name-calling, for example, were twice as high there on their online site, newspaper sites than what we see on the Arizona Daily Star. And so there is some kind of cultural difference between the two. What we've tried to do is simply look at types of speech that we think can contribute to incivility without outright calling something is incivil, because we do think that there is a continuum, and we recognize that different people have different thresholds for tolerance when they hear something that they disagree. And so the things that we're looking at are things like, do people call each other names or call people in the article that they're responding to names? Are aspersions cast? Do people call someone in the article or another poster a liar? Because what happens with speech is that as soon as you call someone a liar, there really is no reason to continue on with the discussion, because why would you continue a discussion with someone whose truth you're consistently challenging? We looked at vulgarity and hyperbole and sarcasm. So we're trying to categorize types of speech. We are definitely sensitive to people, especially, I think, from who may have felt that this was a Democratic launching point to essentially hone in or to wrangle in the types of arguments that were being made from the right. And we think that when all is said and done, when we release a report sometime this summer, that people will have some confidence in the numbers that we're generating. Again, because we're taking a very conservative view of what potentially makes up incivility.
We are talking on Friday Focus with Dr. Kate Kensky, who teaches in the Department of Communication at the University of Arizona. After the break, as we continue with Friday Focus, an April 2010 study by Allegheny College saying a whopping 95% of Americans believe civility in politics is important for a healthy democracy. If that's true, why aren't the politicians listening? We continue now with Friday Focus.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron Mackintosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Kolb Road extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show, and we have Dr. Kate Kensky. Dr. Kensky is in the Department of Communication at the University of Arizona. Dr. Kensky is joined here asking questions by Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star and Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. Dr. Kensky, I mentioned before the break that pretty much 95% of Americans, according to that Allegheny College survey that was done in April of 2010, believe that civility in politics is important for a healthy democracy. So the polls show that the voters don't want negativity, but then the candidates, they get together with their campaign managers and they put out negative ads because I guess negativity sells. So how do you figure this out?
It does sell. And unfortunately, people have what is called a negativity bias, meaning that when we hear a series of messages, we're more likely to recall a negative incident or a negative message than we are positive ones. And that just seems to be programmed into us psychologically. And so we can say that we don't like negative campaigning, but in terms of what we remember as we go to vote at the polling booth or fill out our absentee ballot, oftentimes those negative attacks are what comes to the top of mind and influences how we make our decisions.
Let's go now to Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer of the Arizona Daily Star.
I wanted to ask another question about the mechanics of the study that you're doing, because I've noticed that, and I'm not the only one, but the online commenters that the Arizona Daily Star has, there are a lot of people who this seems to be a main form of entertainment. And so they frequently comment, they're saying similar type things, repeating kind of themes. As a researcher, what does that mean to the scientific work that you're doing? And is that a well-rounded view of civility in and of itself?
Not particularly, no. And again, part of that has to do with the anonymity that we issue that we talked about before, and that this different online groups get different characters. Different people become leaders of the group as people get to know each other. And we're taking all that into consideration. One of the things over the 3 weeks that we studied, there were about 6,500 comments, but I think probably only about 400 posters. And so clearly some people are not just saying things once. They do have a rapport with others, and it is a place where they go and they know each other. And so that can affect results. It's hard to say whether they do it just for entertainment or whether or not they see themselves as making a difference. We're not sure about that. But we do know that other people, even if they don't, what studies would show is even if they don't post, they do go and look at what other people have to say.
Here's Mark Evans now of TucsonCitizen.com.
In your 2010 book about the Obama campaign, you guys talked quite a bit about the innovations of that campaign and how they use technology to, including, emerging online medias like Twitter and Facebook and the like, and even old-fashioned email to micro-target particular voting blocks. To try and move numbers incrementally and over time, but eventually move them considerably. And I'm wondering if your research will look at, in political discourse, whether there's a difference in how candidates communicate with voters by media types, whereas they're much more negative in the broad broadcast cable TV ads, whereas they might be much more positive on a local focused Twitter or tweet or something like that?
That's an excellent question. One of the things that scholars are grappling with right now is how to basically collect data in a way that's representative off of something like Twitter or representative of something off of Facebook in particular. When people post on social sites, the problem is that you can't easily sample what it is that people are seeing because you don't have that same access. And so in some ways, a lot of this research, it's hard to tell what's coming out of it. We presume that on sites where people are controlling their content, that things are potentially much more negative because, again, there's a certain protection in that outside sources can't necessarily see what other people are seeing. And so that micro-targeting, the presumption has always been that you can do much more hard-hitting attacks, not only would I say through new technology, but through direct mail. Direct mail pieces are often much more pointed than what you're going to see on television, because on television, you potentially can motivate the other side if you have a hard-hitting attack that the other side sees and doesn't find fair.
And looking ahead, and I want to remind our listeners that you are the co-author of The Obama Victory, How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election. Kate Kensky is with us from the University of Arizona Department of Communication. As you now are looking at the Obama and Romney matchup, what do you make of that? More of the same? Is Obama going to pretty much use the game plan he used in 2008?
I would say that he did have an excellent game plan in 2008, and I have no doubt that his team will be refining those strategies that worked for him so well. One of the things that came out of the 2008 election, as mentioned, was that Obama's campaign was much more effective in using new technology to disseminate their information. They also had more money to do that as well, which also makes a difference. So I would expect that some of that would be more of the same, but also much more developed as we get into the campaign. One of the things that came out of our research from 2008 was that Obama's campaign was particularly great at using old technologies, radio, to disseminate messages in a micro-targeting way. It turns out that, as I'm sure you probably know this from working in radio, that radio markets are rather specific in terms of their demographic and ideological characteristics. And so ends up being that old technology, a very effective way to get a very targeted message out to a particular community.
And a quick kind of follow-up to that about radio, a lot of the people that I have discovered being now in talk radio that listen to talk radio don't watch a lot of television. So these messages and the campaign managers need to realize, hey, it's a different animal here, and you really need to get to the people that are listening to radio as well, Kate Kensky.
Absolutely.
Okay, here's Sarah Garrett-Gasson. Quick question, Sarah.
I wanted to ask about we talked briefly about the 2010 election between Gabrielle Giffords and Jesse Kelly and just the tone of that, and it was just seemed to be such a microcosm of really nasty election things, name calling. It was just very, very, very personal more than about the issues. Has that changed, are you seeing, in this round of the CD8 election?
Yes, definitely. I think that in particular, 2010 was a really big push with the Tea Party movement, which is still active. But given those events and just how things modulate from election to election, people are craving some more moderation, not necessarily ideological moderation, but in terms of how ideas are conveyed. And I think that we are seeing Jesse Kelly present himself in a way that is getting across, I think, some of those same ideas that he had before, but in a way that tries to reach across, at least to independents, rather than merely mobilize one side.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up right there. Dr. Kate Kensky, our guest on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Kensky teaching political communication, public opinion, and research methods at the University of Arizona in the Department of Communication. She is the co-author of The Obama Victory, How Media Money and Message Shaped the 2008 Election. Dr. Kensky, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Kate Kensky with us on The Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, we have the Friday Reporters Roundtable. The lawmakers have said that's enough for this particular session. We will talk a little bit. And a lot of people are breathing a sigh of relief. Oh, my goodness, it's over. Okay, that continues as we come up now on the bottom of the hour on The Buckmaster Show. Stay with us.
SRN News, I'm Wally Hines in Washington. President Obama says April's jobs report shows the economy is still creating jobs, but also that we've got a lot more to do. The Labor Department report finds the economy added just 115,000 jobs last month. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney is seeking an election year advantage on the economy by setting 4% as the target for the nation's unemployment rate. Romney also says the economy should be creating about 500,000 jobs a month. Men rarely get breast cancer, but new research says when they do, they often don't fare as well as women. The findings come in the largest study yet on male breast cancer. The study found women live on average about 2 years longer after diagnosis than men. Men tend to be older when diagnosed, and their cancer is more advanced than women with breast cancer. More details at srnnews.com.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including five major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTrans, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show at 12:34 on this Friday on KVOI AM 1030. It's time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists who are kind enough to come into the Buckmaster Show each week to talk about the week's top stories. And, you know, we never have a shortage of things to talk about. Joining me on the Friday Reporters Roundtable, Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer of the Arizona Daily Star, and Mark Evans is the administrator for TucsonCitizen.com. And we welcome you to join in the conversation at any time. The live line number 790-2040, and the Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Check out their fine website, SplendidoTucson.com. Sarah and Mark, the legislature no longer in session, and a lot of people go, oh boy,
yes,
that's good great news. Maybe they won't do any damage.
Can the congregation get an amen?
I'm going to begin with you, Mark. Yes, there's a little more money for this, a little more money for that. But when you look at the next budget, 2013, get out the old scissors again. The
right.
Cutting will be back.
Well, presumably, yeah. I mean, this
maybe.
This budget is essentially a flat line. I think it's maybe 1% more overall. And so there's been some money shifted around a little bit here for there. The governor got, you know, through a few bones thrown to her so that she wouldn't veto it. And, you know, the prisons got, you know, their annual gift. So, but all in all, it's pretty much the same. I mean, the governor wanted $200 million for education. The Republicans didn't in the legislature didn't want any money for education. They settled on $100 million, roughly 80 for the K-12 schools and 20 for the universities, of which six is going to go to the UA Med School in Phoenix. But even there, they wanted 15 or needed 15, but they only got six. So they'll take what they get. So, yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's a flat line. And what it's done is they've taken $450 million and stuck it into the proverbial lockbox. They put it into a savings account. And really what that is doing is waiting for the 1 cent sales tax increase that was approved in 2010, which expires May 31st of next year, 2013.
And that's why I said there's likely going to be some cutting.
Right. So they have saved money this year to pay for not only the end of that tax increase, but then a whole bunch of tax cuts that they approved not only this year, but last year, start rolling into effect for fiscal year 2014. And I think the reason they approved all those tax cuts this year is because they don't know what's going to happen with how the elections are going to go in November with redistricting. Some of them might not be here next year. So they approved a whole bunch of tax cuts that don't go into effect until many of them might not even be in the legislature.
Sarah?
Yeah, it's the same sort of story that we typically hear with the Arizona legislature in terms of education still being not funded the way it should be. There were severe cuts over the past several years that have not been restored to that and to public health and a lot of the human services end of things. And while it's I guess you could say wise to save for the knowing that the sales tax is going to run out, there are it's raining now. There are immediate needs that need to be taken care of for the people who live in our state. So it's a matter of, do you help the people that are here today in the best way that we can in terms of funding and resources, or do you stash a large chunk of money away to try to buffer yourself against what you know is going to be budgetary bad years because of the tax change and then also the tax cuts that Mark was mentioning.
And, you know, that's to me, that's a matter of integrity because they didn't go to the voters in 2000 and said, hey, agree to tax yourselves more and raise this extra $1 billion a year so that we could sock it away for when the tax cut expires and use it to pay, or when the tax increase expires and we can use it to pay for tax cuts. They said, we want you to pass this so that we can spend more money on education. And so here they have this opportunity this year where the first year in last four, they have a budget surplus, they have extra money, and instead of doing what they told the voters they were going to do, was spend it on education, they shunted it away and put it to pay for their tax cut. And I just think that's a slap in the face to voters. It's just an outrage to me.
How will this session be remembered, Sarah Garrett Gasson?
Daniel
Patterson.
Yeah. We've had some interesting sort of sideshows in the legislature. We had Daniel Patterson.
Distractions.
Yes, distractions. Yeah. Daniel Patterson, in my view, the whole issue of contraception and insurance coverage and things that have nothing to do with the effective running of a state and its economy and well-being of its residents got a lot of play, and that's sadly not unusual.
I mean, they referred to voters a ballot proposition that is ridiculous. It basically wants the voters of Arizona to say that all the lands that are owned by the federal government should belong to the state of Arizona. So the federal government has to give up all the BLM lands, all the national parks, all the national forests to be controlled by the state of Arizona. And that's just ridiculous. There's no point of having wasted any time
that
on
that. That isn't going to happen.
Even if the voters were to agree and to have approved it, it doesn't mean anything. No. It's unconstitutional.
And now what about the changing the election cycle? Every municipality will be basically doing the same time when they do the election, Sarah.
Right. This is – there are a couple issues going on here. The way it works now or is that there's four dates in a year that a municipality can hold an election primary in general, two in the spring and two in the fall, generally speaking. What this would do is make – municipalities, school districts, those sort of local elections happen only when there are national contests, which would mean two dates every 2 years. So the rationale, supporters say, is that if national things run the ballot, people come out, voter turnout is higher, which is true. It is. But aside from that, this is also another example, and there are many, of the legislature butting its nose into local control issues. The legislature doesn't have really any interest in whether people in Pima County or Tucson or Sunnyside School District come out and vote on a bond issue or anything else. So it's just one more example of the legislature doing what it protests so much against the federal government and exerting its desires into what needs to be a local issue.
Well, what's the point of this? Would it supposedly save money?
It would supposedly save money, and two, it would increase turnout in local elections. There's some electioneering going on here, so that in national elections you get a higher turnout of Republicans, and in some of the Democratic bastions of Arizona, you would get more Republicans to turn out, and so they would think they would have a better opportunity to get more of their candidates elected in places like Phoenix and Tucson, and up in the Flagstaff area where there's actual liberals in Arizona. And so it's part of that. But the other thing that one of the things that bothers me is that it becomes so restrictive that you can only have an election every 2 years. Well, things happen right now where you might need a school district might need to go to a budget override, or it might need a bond election, or a city might have to do something like raise a sales tax like Tucson was trying to do a couple of years ago, where they would have to wait maybe 2 years and where things get worse before they can try and raise any more revenue. And so that alone, I think, is ridiculous. And then plus, I don't think, playing armchair lawyer here, that it'll probably survive because you've just had a Supreme Court ruling this year where the state tried to change how Tucson conducts its elections. But because Tucson is a charter city, the Arizona Supreme Court said, you know what, the state, they're a charter city, they can conduct their elections as they wish. So it may be that everybody but charter cities will have to switch their elections, but the charter cities won't, or it may get tossed out altogether.
Let's go now to the local level, to downtown Tucson. We always like to talk about we all mentioned Rio Nuevo on pretty much every reporter's roundtable for the last, I don't know how many years. The editorial Tuesday in the Arizona Daily Star had to do with Humberto Lopez, and he is the owner of Hotel Arizona, and they are closed. Facility is now closed, and the Star editorial, the closure should not affect dealing with the city.
Right. For years, Humberto Lopez has been basically holding the Hotel Arizona kind of as a giant chip that, you know, well, if things don't go my way in these land deals that I'm trying to arrange with the city, then I'm going to close the hotel. And so finally he did it. And he and his company and the city are in the midst of negotiation over potential tax rebates, allowing him to use tax revenues to refurbish the hotel, which absolutely needs to be refurbished, and spiff it up. And then
– yeah, their occupancy level was what, about 10%?
Yeah, it was not – I mean – they closed it, but I don't know that anyone actually noticed. So the kind of thing that's going on here is our position, and the mayor, Jonathan Rothschild, echoes this, is that his decision to close his failing hotel should not have any bearing on how the negotiations between the city and anyone else in the district they're talking about doing this tax situation with. It's not something that should come into play. You need a good deal. You need a deal that protects the taxpayers. You need to be willing to say there is no deal because we can't protect the taxpayers. And his power move to close the hotel should have no bearing.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel, for all intents and purposes, was closed. I mean, he only had a couple of floors open, and he was stripping out the upper floor rooms, fixtures and things up there to repair things down on the lower floor. So, I mean, its closure is going to be negligible
so
in terms of downtown economy.
So he's cannibalizing one floor
to fix the lower floors to try and stay open. So, but the issue brings us back into the same boat that we were in a year or more ago, which is improving the convention center, rebuilding the convention center, expanding the convention center, and whether there should be a hotel attached to that as part of the reconstruction process, or whether you do the convention center first and then you have so much business coming in that a local developer or even a national developer will come in and want to build a hotel to fill a market niche, and the city wouldn't have to throw in any money towards it. You know, where's the cart and where's the horse in this debate? And, you know, to get back into talking about, well, we have to have a convention center hotel and we should build a convention center hotel first and then fix the convention center is backwards. We need to fix the convention center and then have a discussion about the hotel. So closing the hotel now, I don't think really matters, and I don't think it improves Bert Lopez's negotiating position at all.
I would agree with that, and we shouldn't forget that now the arena idea is being
back.
Last
week we had Councilman Cunningham on the show, and he has an op-ed piece in today's Arizona Daily Star, again trying to make his case that we need to revisit the arena.
Yeah. And
a new arena.
Well, I feel like we've been here before. And then were here.
Weren't we going to have like an arena that was shaped like a turtle?
I actually liked that idea. Yeah. I thought that would be actually
a desert tortoise.
But I'm a fan of desert tortoises, so
I actually have one that lives in your backyard.
I do. Her name is Dorothy.
Again, it's a if we build it, they will come. Hope and prayer, which is if we have an arena, well, then we'll find somebody to fill it. You need to find somebody to fill it and then build an arena for them. And so one of the things they've talked about is moving the Arizona Wildcats basketball team into a downtown arena, and they could sell alcohol, and they would sell out, and it would be a real big hootenanny.
But that might be one game.
And the High Corbett, the recent move of the Wildcats baseball team to High Corbett would be an example of that, because right now High Corbett, where the Arizona Wildcats at Sunset Field, we're barely getting a few hundred people. Now they're getting several thousand. They have the number one attendance in the Pac-10. So it would make sense for U of A and the city to reach that deal. But we went down this road once before and didn't get anywhere because it came down to who's going to pay for it. And so the city wants the U of A to pay for it. U of A wants the city to pay for it, or they would have both ways, or they would split it. And that's where it broke down. And I assume that's where it's going to break down again.
And saying goodbye hurts most when the experience has been worthwhile. That was the headline for Sarah Garrett Gasson's op-ed piece in Tuesday's paper. And for those that didn't read any further, they're going, oh, no, is Sarah leaving the Star?
She's gone.
No, this was about some of your some memories that you had from your St. Louis days, your teaching days now at the U of A.
Right. And it's, I mean, it's graduation time. We teach at the U of A. Mark teaches as well. And so it's that time of year when you can't help but kind of look back and think about times that have gone before and just realize that I went to my friend's 40th birthday party back in Kirkwood, Missouri, where I'm from. And so it just sort of reminded me that in the age of instant communication and all these different ways to be in touch with each other, it's the bonds that sort of transcend the instant communication that will remain and last. And if something doesn't hurt when you have to say goodbye to it, when a chapter is ending, then it's the kind of thing that it probably isn't something that you're going to remember in the future anyway.
And we can look forward.
Yes, we can look forward.
Lovely. Kirkwood, Missouri, one of the beautiful suburbs, very leafy neighborhoods of St. Louis, Missouri. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye, at least for this edition of the Reporters Roundtable. And Sarah and Mark, we'll see you down the road. I'll be taking a week off next week, but the show will go on. Thank you very much.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. Weekend Watch with the culinary cruiser Matt Russell's coming up next. Lots of things going on for Cinco de Mayo.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron Mackintosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves, Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of healthcare in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
And that music can mean only one thing. The man himself, the culinary cruiser, well-known publicist in Tucson, owner of Matt Russell Public Communications. And today, he is wearing, I cannot believe this, in honor of Cinco de Mayo, Mexican flag Bermuda shorts. Where in the world did you find such a thing? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, if anyone is going to find them, you know it's going to be me. I mean, I'm a man for all seasons, Bill Buckmaster, and as we celebrate Cinco de Mayo, I have to be in the threads. That's the way it goes.
So much going on this weekend. This is a huge foodie weekend. Shall we begin with the agave?
Yeah, this is really where Cinco de Mayo, the weekend, really kicks off. Tonight at 6 o'clock at the Hotel Congress downtown, the 4th annual Agave Fest, which is going to feature more than 40 tequilas and mezcals to taste. There's going to be live music and street tacos to accompany that sassy little spirit as your palate tastes its way across Mexico. Now, there's also going to be an Iron Chef-style cocktail competition that's going to pit about 8 of our community's best-known bartenders against one another to see who can make the best tequila-based cocktail. Now, I've been invited to be a judge at this year's event.
Oh, no.
And, boy, do I have my work cut out for me at the Agave Fest tonight at Hotel Congress. 40 tequilas, Bill Buckmaster. Where does one begin?
Oh, I don't know, but I know you're going to be in demand now after you were a judge last weekend at the Taco Festival, then this weekend a judge. And I know you're going to say you're just going to take a sip of each of the 40, but when it comes to a one-ounce glass of each of the 40, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, I think Weight Watchers is going to be the next sponsor of the weekend watch on the Bill Buckmaster show.
Cinco de Mayo up at, this is appropriate, up at Blanco.
Yeah, right up on the foothills, they're going to be celebrating Cinco de Mayo as well, up at Blanco and La Encantada. Outrageous specials, Bill, on classic margaritas and top-shelf margaritas, Mexican beer, all with some of that regional cuisine that really brings Mexico one step closer to home. I love their green chili pork enchiladas with poblano peppers and tomatillo. And, Bill, the setting on that beautiful patio overlooking the city, I just don't think can be beat. The party starts tomorrow morning at 10 at Blanco for some great food and drink.
Oh, my goodness. Start it all off like that's forget about breakfast.
I'll have a margarita with my Captain Crunch, please.
And, of course, El Charro, their 90th anniversary in conjunction with Cinco de Mayo. I love the fish tacos at El Charro.
They're outstanding. I think some of the best in town. And, 90th anniversary doesn't seem like that far away. I think what you and your lovely wife, Ann, have, 50 more years until you hit 90?
Yeah, right. We've got 40, so now let's push for the next.
Exactly. 50. Well, happy anniversary from all of us at Weekend Watch. But, look, for the traditionalists among us, really El Charro just can't be beat. And they're going to be having a huge party today and tomorrow at all of their locations. 90-cent Coronas, 90-cent Pacificos, 90-cent Sousa margaritas, and then, of course, you can chow down cruiser style, as we like to say, with 90-cent tamales and 90-cent chicken tacos. Now, you mentioned the Taco Festival, and after I judged that event last week, I think I hit taco tilt, as they say. But these babies, as you suggested, these fish tacos are some of the best in town. I just got to get over there to celebrate today and tomorrow at all 5 El Charros.
Yeah, and what's funny about that is you say that you kind of had your fill of tacos, but I know the truth that by the time you got home, you were already yearning for a taco.
The refrigerator was open and the grill was on as soon as I got home.
Have a great Cinco de Mayo. Thank you so much, Matt Russell.
You did the same. Thanks, Phil.
We are so thankful for the growing list of Buckmaster Show sponsors. The latest to join our team, Adobe House Antiques. I love this place, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. Some of the early pioneer Arizona artists are there. Adobe House Antiques. It's in a Jostler design building from the 1940s at 2700 North Campbell. Stop by, say hello to Penny, the owner. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. And the Friday edition of Buckmaster made possible by our friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Great people out there in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. And speaking of great people, certified public accountant Michael C. Flowers, Flowers and Rieger, certified public accountants, 2919 East Broadway. We are thankful also for their support. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of our team, my producer, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. Have a great weekend.
KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, The Voice, Good News Radio Network.